got a download so don't you are SBS Mong.
Welcome Margaret Eldridge from Tasmania. She's writing a book called New Mountain, New Rivers, New Home, the Tasmanian Mong. So could you tell us more about why you're writing about this book?
To be honest, I didn't really want to write it. I wanted Votau to write the book. He's been a friend of mine since he came here as an international student in the 70s. And I tried to persuade him to write the book, but he declined and said that he felt it would be better if it was written by an outsider. So I tried to find other people to write it, but in the end I realized that I probably was the best person to do it because I'd known the Hmong for a long time. I'd also worked in Laos, so I'd seen things from the other perspective, and I knew nearly all the adult Hmong who'd come to Hobart because I had been their teacher, and they trusted me. And so eventually, after a lot of persuasion, I accepted the request and spent the next 3 years writing the book. Say, I did it as a master's because I knew if I didn't have some kind of discipline, it might never be finished. So I enrolled as a master's student at the University of Tasmania, and that sort of legitimized what I was doing.
Mm-hmm. So you study specifically for that course to research about Hmong in Tasmania?
Yes, it was a master's by research. I really wanted the story to be on public record. It worried me that, most refugee and migrant groups have their story recorded somewhere, and it worried me that the Hmong didn't feel able to do that themselves. And I really did encourage them to put it on record, so that what is a wonderful but also sad story could be shared with people in Australia specifically.
It seems like your book has been out for quite some time now.
It's been printed twice. I republished it, so 3 years, I suppose, yes.
So what are some of the reactions that people who have read your book?
The reaction from the Hmong here was quite overwhelming. They was just so grateful that the story was finally available to others. And in terms of people who've read the book, they were amazed that they didn't know the story and that it was so complicated, actually. The history of the Hmong is very complicated and diverse, and they couldn't believe that all these things were going on in Laos during the time of the Vietnam War, and we didn't know about it. It's not public knowledge. I can't say they were pleasantly surprised, because it's not an easy story to tell. But, I've had a lot of very positive comments about the book.
What are the reasons why it is not an easy story to tell?
Well, if you go back to the origins that we know of the Hmong, not their real origins, because we really don't know where the Hmong came from, but if you go back to early Chinese writings, the Hmong were very unpopular and there was a lot of conflict. So it starts off as a story of conflict and not being acknowledged. And it goes right the way through Chinese history, French colonial history, modern Lao history, because I followed in particular the Hmong ended up in Laos. I mean, some absolutely dreadful things happened. There were wars, there were rebellions, there was exploitation, ill-treatment by the French, and then the secret war.
That's true. Unfortunately, Australian government at the time doesn't have a refugee program, and the settlement in the United States seems like to be problematic because the Western countries, they just see Hmong people that might not be educated and they may not be able to assimilate or adapt to the Western lifestyle. So is that so, that we don't have the refugee policy for refugee from Southeast Asia?
Well, the original Hmong who came here came as international student. Vu Tao was the one that I knew here. And so when things got really difficult, they were able to bring relatives from Laos who came under the family reunion program, which was a refugee program, but it didn't acknowledge, or at least it wasn't, it was a migration program, and it didn't acknowledge that these people were actually refugees. The refugee status came a lot later, and I had great difficulty finding any reference, any official reference to what was going on. And in the book, my informants say to me, it was policy on the run, it was telephone diplomacy, there are no written records of bringing them on here as a group, which still amazes me and certainly amazed my supervisor when I was doing my master's. She said, this is impossible. You have to have written reference, you have to have printed documents. And I said, I have looked everywhere and there are none. And that's still the case. So it's a very unusual situation.
It was also a surprise to me that there are Hmong scholars who study in Australia. Why shouldn't they write about it? Do they collaborate with you or co-author with you?
The people who collaborated with me were my former students who mostly came as recognized refugees. There was also Vu's family who came as family reunion. And because I had taught nearly all of them, taught them English, they knew who I was. And when it came to interviewing people, they were very, very willing to talk with me. And but they did say, we don't talk to journalists. And I said, why not? And they said, well, we don't know who they are. And I said, but you're talking to me. And they said, yes, because we know you. And so that trust was really very, very important for me to be able to write the story. The fact that people were willing to tell me really quite intimate details of their lives and their experiences. And that's another reason why I think I was very fortunate, because I know that they don't, the Hmong as a group, if I can generalize, don't talk to strangers about their lives.
Probably they're media shy, very introvert community, which they tend to keep things to themselves instead of open up.
I don't put it like that. Yes, they are shy, but it's this matter of trust. Who do you trust with your story? If you are concerned that maybe relatives of yours will be harmed because you've told the story, you don't tell it.
I see.
If you talk to someone that has taught you English and who has made it very clear that she cares for you, then you're prepared to talk. And the other thing was that when I first started, I said to the Hmong that I was interviewing, because I went up to Innisfail and Cairns and Brisbane, where they had moved, and I said, you know, why didn't you tell me these things when I was your teacher? And they said, Margaret, we didn't have the language to tell you because we didn't speak enough English. So it's all, you know, been revealed over time. I spent a month in Queensland and I stayed with three different Hmong families, all of whom I had been teacher.
Okay.
I stayed with Lou's brother. I didn't teach him, but I did teach his mother. And I stayed with two families, one in Innisfail and one in Cairns. In the case of the family in Cairns, I had helped to settle them as a volunteer. as well as being their teacher.
Have you talked to Hmong youth, younger people?
Yes, I have. When you were having your 40th anniversary of settlement in Australia, I tried to get the younger Hmong to celebrate that in some way. I knew that it was being celebrated in Melbourne, but I felt that there was a very small group here by that time, encouraged them to have a celebration here. And we met together and had a little party, and we made boats similar to the ones which Anthony Vu was using to celebrate in Cairns. He wanted a boat for every day that the Hmong had been in Australia, so we added to that collection of boats. We wrote messages on the boats, on the little paper boats, and he used them in a display in Cairns. I didn't see it, but I know that our boats were sent out of that display.
Have you any chance to talk to Hmong youth about in the future, if they study, they should write something about their experience as a refugee or their settlement in Australia or Hmong history?
I think I can say I've encouraged a lot of younger Hmong. They know that I was the teacher of their parents, and in some cases I remember a little girl coming up to me, and she reached up, I suppose she was up to about my tummy, and she leant against me and put her arms round me, and she said, "Margaret, you were my grandmother's teacher." And that was very, very moving. So obviously the story of, you know, teacher Margaret had been told within the families, and I never taught that little girl, but I had taught her grandparents, and she knew who I was, even if I didn't know who she was. I've encouraged a number of the younger Hmong whose parents were my students, encouraged them to stay at school. I actually taught Hmong girls who were pregnant and unable to continue their schooling, and I taught them through distance learning to help them complete their grade 10 qualifications. And I think that generation, I used some of that generation of younger Hmong to read the book before it was finished, to see what they felt about the book, whether the story was helpful to them. And they all said, "Why didn't we know all of this before?" Parents hadn't talked to them, and I suspect in some cases their parents didn't even know the things that were in the book, and they obviously didn't, for the most part, didn't talk to their children about their very bad experiences in refugee camps on the Thai border. They got on with their lives and they tried to find a way to make a living, and they didn't sit and talk to their children. So that the response was very much, you know, why do we know? Why hasn't anybody ever told us this? I felt that one of the important aspects of the book was that that younger generation could read their story, whereas they hadn't obtained that story from anywhere else.
That would be something that triggers their curiosity and then do more research, more thorough research about their own histories.
I hope so. I did say at the end of the book that, you know, there's an opportunity for the younger Hmong to follow through, to write about what their generation has been able to achieve, because when you compare their situation with their parents' situation, they've had some wonderful opportunities, and, you know, they have qualified in areas that their parents couldn't even dream about. And, you know, I'm very much encouraged them to pursue their education.
Do you have anything to add about the experience you're writing about this book about Hmong community in Tasmania, or Hmong in general?
Well, one of the things I'd like to add is that I think the story would make a really interesting film. I have had a number of companies in America say, you know, this is film material, and it would be an absolute delight to me if somebody was able to pick up on that. Unfortunately, I can't, but I think it's an epic story. if you go back to the origins in China, question about, you know, where did the Hmong come from originally? I wish someone would have their DNA done and see whether that throws any light on the origins of the Hmong, because there are different stories that not everybody agrees. You know, Mesopotamia, Siberia, northern countries where the water is white, in other words, it's snow. Who knows? I don't. But I'd love to find the answer to that question.
In regard to doing DNA test, I happened to read a research paper, but just a research paper and not too many. So yeah, in that sense, in the future, more scholar to actually look into that. Yeah,
it's an area of interest. It would be fascinating to follow through. I'm nearly 83 now. I'm afraid my days researching the Hmong are probably over. Never lose my interest in the Hmong as a people. And I wouldn't have had that experience if they hadn't come here. And if I hadn't made friends with Vu Tao initially, I would have been the poorer for it. He's been a very good, interesting friend. And through him, I've met so many other people. And I've been able to tell a story that is difficult to tell, complicated, and difficult to research too. Nothing written in Hmong, only written in Chinese. And, you know, when you have a group of people whose culture doesn't depend on the written word, it's very hard to trace the stories when they've come as part of an oral tradition.
So what's your experience with the Hmong during the settlement then and now? What's the difference that you see?
Well, I'm just so impressed with where my former students have gone in terms of finding employment in Australia, bringing up in many cases very large families and ensuring that they've made the most of their education. Writing it all down has been really quite a special experience, and people have been so honest with me, and I've learned things that I never expected. I never anticipated that I would learn as much as I did. And I'm just so grateful for having been involved with the Hmong community here, particularly because it's been this lovely friendship and trusting relationship where I get called Mother of the Hmong. And, you know, people still come to me. If there's a problem, they will still come and say, Margaret, what should we do? You know, that is really very, very special.
So they see you as a figure that they can consult, get advice, see as a person that is important to Hmong community. And yeah, thank you very much for writing Hmong story for Hmong many generations to come to read, to know about Hmong story. And thank you very much for sharing your story with SBS Radio Hmong Program.
My pleasure. It's been lovely meeting you.
사랑도 야서 수정한 남들아, 농담의 Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Spotify를 영롱다운 날리자 Podcast다운.